It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Danny and Dusty.
My Uncle Gus is the uncle that liked to work the grill. As soon as you walk in the house, it's like, get away from that grill. You don't know how to start no fire.
With the latest on the Blazers, Ducks, Beavers, and the hottest topics in sports.
We're going to eat a hamburger, okay? Here we go. Chad, throw the match. Now that's a fire.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
I'm not cooking a brontosaurus burger.
The Fan.
Great weekend of college football.
Indeed.
We had some games of note, games of consequence around the world of college football. Started Friday night with Illinois knocking off Nebraska in overtime. Brett Bielema's crew. That was a good sneaky good little game that we had there in Lincoln.
Yeah, it was. It was a really good game.
A touchdown turn interception. Mm-hmm. You have a fumble at the end to kind of seal the deal. It got everything you wanted out of it.
Overtime's all over the place.
Yeah.
Colorado getting totally drunk. The Palouse going full tilt Cougar.
Yeah. Friday night, Cougs erase a deficit and come rallying back behind John the Tier.
500 yards of offense.
Just an animal. Dude, I love that kid.
He makes some boneheaded plays, but boy, does he make some just game-breaking plays. He's
fun college
so much
football
fun.
Player.
So much fun.
He's one of those guys that you're like...
Elite college football player to watch.
NFL career, not going to happen. But when you rush for 111 yards in a touchdown, you throw for, 390 in four touchdowns? Yeah, sign me up. And they had to rally back, was it 22 in the fourth quarter to force overtime, and then you'd knock them off? Yeah, let's go, Cougs! That was the most hangover game ever. We talked about that on Friday at the end of the show. It was, you got to fight the hangover of winning the Apple Cup in the biggest game of your season. And they did. They scratched and clawed their way back into that game and found a way to win. But Illinois, I said this at the... Remember when Big Ten, we were talking over the summer, and I said, Illinois is going to be one of those sneaky games. And everybody's like, bah, whatever. Illinois is going to be a physical Big Ten slobber knocker type game. You know it's going to happen. Brett Bielema, he's going to do it. He's got Luke Altmyer at quarterback. Limited, but does enough to win, right? October 26th, all of a sudden that game is getting a little bit more juicy for the Oregon Ducks when Illinois comes to town. But I think the marquee game of the weekend was number 18 Michigan hosting 11th ranked USC. And that game sure played out like we thought it would, right? Zero semblance of a passing game for Michigan in that. Alex Orji getting the start, playing the entire game. He attempted 12 passes on the day.
Yeah, I think the over-under number was 13, and he hit the under.
It was between the tackles, run the ball down your throat, and will USC be able to hold up in the trenches? On the defensive side of the ball, they did. They did. And I don't, 290 yards rushing, when you run the ball 46 times, you're gonna get some yards racked up against you. The explosives are where the
backbreaker. That's what did them in. And I want watching that game back, or just thinking in my head about that game, is everybody says, "Oh, USC got manhandled." Outside of those four plays, Michigan did absolutely nothing. But those four plays broke their back. But everybody's gonna talk about the late one with Mullings. The one that kills me is the one in the first quarter. After the fourth down.
Yeah, the 53-yarder for a touchdown.
That's the one that kills me. Because that set the tempo for the day. Not only on what I think was a blown fourth down call, but also that allowed Michigan to play from the front. That allowed Michigan to play from the front and have that. Because USC started out slow. A big part of that was their left tackle, Elijah Page, was getting the crap kicked out of him.
I think that there's so much football to be played. you should be able to. You get back up off the ground off that. The fourth down, that was so close. I know that USC fans are up in arms about it, but if you I stopped it right at a point where he got turned sideways, and the ball looked like it had crossed the line to gain, but it was so close. It was like, why aren't they going to take a look at it? Like, why don't you take a look at it? Instead, they're like, nope, moving the chains. We're going to go next play. Boom, touchdown. That one hurts. And those are the momentum plays in a game, though, where, you know, like we talked about this a lot with Oregon and Boise State, right? The 70-yard touchdown run by Ashton Gentry off a sudden change. Mm-hmm. It's the momentum. USC is like, oh, we thought we got him. Well, you need to get back up and you need to be ready to go, or else they're going to pop the big one on you. Those big momentum swinging plays and being able to fight your way back. I thought USC eventually did, but their offense, you said it, they were lethargic out the gate.
That first half, it looked like Lincoln Riley wanted to prove that they could run between the tackles. And it was like, why are you running at literally the strength of this entire team? Mason, did you hear what Mason Graham weighs?
No.
So the broadcasters were talking about their pre-meeting, and they, you know, talking to Mason Graham. They're like, hey, Mason, how much do you weigh? He's like, I had a light breakfast, so probably about 314. That's a 315-pound man who moves like he's 240.
Yeah.
You have to double-team him on every single play.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have an absolute terrorist running off the edge.
Yep.
And it's like, why are you trying? Like, I get it. It's your first Big Ten game, and you want to show that you can compete with the big boys. But that's not what you are right now. And don't get me wrong. USC ended up running the living hell out of the ball. I mean, if you take away the Miller-Moss sacks, they were averaging almost 8 yards a carry.
Yep.
Because they figured out, stop running behind the guard and run to the edges.
I think that Michigan winning completely one-dimensional is concerning for both those teams, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's concerning for USC because they just wore you down. They put you in a phone booth, and they said, we are going to grind you to a pulp. And they did. They did. But at the same token, Miller-Moss throws a pick six. The big momentum plays. Yep. I think it's concerning for Michigan, too, because you made a change at quarterback, and you just said we can't throw the ball, and we won't throw the football. You can't win like that against everybody, especially against the upper echelon teams of the Big Ten. When you play Ohio State, when you play Oregon, in those teams that have backfilled their rosters with more depth, you have to have some semblance of balance. And that's what got USC back in the game, was balance.
Yeah, and they threw to run.
Yeah, and at that point, you're going up against one of the best front sevens in college football.
And the best corner in college football.
But I think it's more impressive what Texas did when they went to Ann Arbor.
Oh, God, yes.
Because watching USC just spin their wheels in mud early in the game, it's like, no. Lincoln Riley, do exactly what Sark did.
Attack.
And say, we are going to game plan for this defense and expose them on the edges when they get overly aggressive. Mm-hmm. We are going to pick you apart in the middle of the field. And Lincoln Riley said, no, I'm going to prove a point. That's a concern.
Yeah, and that bothered me. You know, the second half adjustments were great.
Yeah,
I mean, whether it was getting Elijah Page off the field, moving Mason Murphy over to left tackle, all of a sudden Miller-Moss had time. I mean, he didn't really get touched in the second half other than, you know, the sack where he got yanked down by his face mask. Yeah, that was fun. Both times. But they kept him clean. They allowed him. I mean, they chunk played him to death in the second half. And you're just sitting there going, yeah, that's what should have been there. And it wasn't like Michigan failed to adjust. It was, this is what you should have done the first, like, to start the game. You know where the strength of this team is. It is in their front seven. They are an absolute monster up front. And even Texas said, we're not going to deal with this. We're going to get on the edges, and we're going to play with our speed. And I thought USC did a really good job of in the second half, of getting Zach Branch the ball.
Yeah.
Michigan was finding ways to do it. Yeah, Michigan was great at tackling him in space because there were times where I was like, oh, he might. There was another play where he had Branch and he overthrew Miller-Moss overthrew him. It would have been six. It was just brutal. It was probably one of the only like true throws that Miller Moss had all day where he had time and missed. But I came away from that game going, okay, you acquitted yourself better than I thought you would have in the second half. I did. The first half is what doomed them. The first half is what doomed them, whether it was, you know, giving up the two big runs, the one for 50, one for 60, that go for touchdowns. Your inability to get anything going. You had negative 3 yards in the first quarter.
Yep.
Like, that's that's crazy. And everybody's like, oh, you know, USC gave up all these rushing yards. Again, you take out those explosive plays, Michigan didn't do anything. I thought, for the most part, USC tackled really well all game long. Akili Arnold and Mascarenhas were both great on the ankle pick tackles on the edges that kept Michigan from breaking big plays. But those long touchdown runs, where did they come? Right between the center and the guard. All of them. They came right up the middle where you're just not big enough in the back end to make those stops at the line of scrimmage, and they break tackles and they go.
Here is the big concern for USC moving forward. 1 week, he held up to it. Depth is the issue up front. Yep. Front line, they're okay. You just played Michigan. By the way, Michigan's rushing attack is sixth in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm. Who are they playing next?
Wisconsin.
All right.
Which is eighth in the Big Ten in rushing. And without Tyler Van Dyke, you know what they're going
to
do.
The ball.
And I don't think USC is – I think USC wins that game. Mm-hmm. But this is where –
it's not going to be fun.
This is where the Big Ten – wants to just wear you down and put you in a meat grinder. Minnesota can't run the ball, doesn't run the ball. Then you have Penn State, which is number two in rushing in the Big Ten. Then you have Maryland after that, which they're just a kind of a middle-of-the-road team. But then you have Rutgers, which is the number one rushing attack in the Big Ten right now, has the best running back, one of the best running backs in college football. And then you go play Washington and Jonah Coleman. Like, this is where the physicality week after week after week, it's going to be tested with the schedule that USC has. And that's going to be the interesting part for me, is to see how USC holds up. I thought, yeah, you take a loss at Michigan, but the way that it played out, you're going to be okay with. Yeah. Outside of the fact Lincoln Riley
tried to get cute in the first half.
Just get out of your own way. Use your weapons on the outside. And he did, and they got back in the game.
And the unfortunate thing is that they did lose Mekhi Lemon, and they did lose like Lake McCree, probably both for the season.
Yeah,
Lake McCree out with a knee injury, and then Mekhi Lemon got his brain scrambled.
All right, we will have more on the Cougs and the Beavs.
Big
wins for the Pac-12. Yeah.
Hey, look, the Beavs were the first former Pac-12 team to get a win against a Big Ten team.
Oh, really?
Yeah, look at that.
Hey, all right.
Because Oregon hasn't opened up their Pac-10 or the Big Ten schedule until this week, and USC lost theirs.
UW did win, but that was, I believe, after Oregon State, right? Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah. I think UW was before.
Was it? UW was
Oregon
before.
State was at night.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
CW at night.
Did you CW got in with TCU?
UW with a 24-5 win, which first time since 1936. Oh.
Not a Scorigami.
1936, when Billy Shakespeare was drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates. 1936 was the last time an opponent had 5 points against UW.
Interesting.
There's part of me that feels like touchdowns were worth 5 points back then.
Probably. 5 points is a funny score.
It is.
It is.
It's a funny football.
Safety is also probably more common.
We have a new team in the Tier 1. Of college football, though, because it was emphatic on Saturday. Danny Dusty on The Fan.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080. The Fan.
Tennessee Volunteers are for real, man. They are in the tier one of the world of college football now.
Yeah, on Friday we wrapped the show kind of tearing up kind of where we thought, you know, the top 10 were in college football and kind of breaking up. And the question we had was, is Tennessee tier one? And they are undoubtedly. They are right there with Texas and Georgia.
We in Ohio State and Ohio State. Ohio State is really damn good at football. It turns out North Carolina State is just not a very good football team.
Turns out the ACC, not very good.
The week two drubbing of NC State, it was like, whoa, all right. But we knew that Oklahoma was going to be a stern test. You go to Norman, they're not underdogs at home, rarely ever. I mean, 2016 was the last time they were a home dog, and that was to Ohio State with JT Barrett and company. That was a damn good Ohio State team that was a point and a half favorite. Tennessee went in there and they mopped the floor with them. I mean, it was 22-3 before Oklahoma scored a touchdown in that game. They end up having to bench their quarterback, Jackson Arnold. And we talked about this on Friday. Tennessee is leaning on their defense, not their offense coached by Josh Heupel. It's their defense that is winning games. They hadn't allowed an offensive touchdown all season. Or they haven't allowed a touchdown by an offense all season until late in that game against Oklahoma. Fourth quarter of that game. Think about that. They played 15 quarters of football without allowing a single touchdown on the defensive side of the ball, and they put the clamps down on anything Oklahoma was trying to do.
They
threw the air, on the ground.
Jackson Arnold might as well have been me back there.
The Oklahoma Sooners averaged 1.1 yards per carry in that football game.
And they had what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys carry the ball. So it wasn't like they weren't trying stuff.
There was one play of over 20 yards for Oklahoma's offense in the game. One play of over 20 yards. They cut the explosives down. They just suffocate you on defense with speed and physicality. Tennessee is legit, man.
And if Tennessee hadn't fumbled, they would have run away with this.
And think about what that game means when your star quarterback only throws for 194 yards. They run the ball, and they ran it down their throat.
And defensively, they are nasty.
They are so damn good.
Nasty. I hate making this comparison, but they reminded me of Georgia. The way Georgia just demolished Clemson. And look, Clemson looked really good this weekend. Mm-hmm. Gabe Klubnik looked really – it reminded me of Oregon going down to Georgia and getting just manhandled and then looking great the rest of the season. Clemson is looking like they might kind of be that team this year where, yeah, Georgia's different, but everybody else, they're going to steamroll through. Yeah. But this Tennessee team, they look vicious. Like, yep. On both sides of the ball, they look like they are idiot-proof.
Well, they do have Bama and Georgia still remaining on mm-hmm. the schedule.
So they'll get tested.
Two rivalry games. Mm-hmm. We're going to find a whole heck of a lot about Tennessee. But Tennessee going to Oklahoma and the way that they handle their business. We talk about two lost teams in this 12-team playoff era. And having two losses isn't your death sentence. Look no further than Tennessee, because they will go back and it'll be wildly unfair to sit there and be like, oh, September. But September 21st is a day that people mm-hmm. will go back to and say, Tennessee went on the road to Oklahoma, shoved the ball down Oklahoma's throat, took their lunch, and walked out of there with a win.
Yeah, and offensively, absolutely neutered them. Defensively, absolutely neutered them.
The scary part for Tennessee is that their best player is only going to get better.
Yeah, like Nico's going to get better.
That's his fourth start, and that's his first true road start. He is only going to get more efficient with the ball, and the way that he was able to evade defenders, I mean, he's 6'6". He shouldn't be able to move the way that he does. He moves almost like Lamar, but he's a taller version of Lamar.
No, I'll tell you, I love Dylan Sampson, their running back, too. And so Deshaun Bishop. They got two really good running backs. They leaned on those guys. And Heupel, like hearing Josh Heupel after mm-hmm. the game, it was awesome to hear a guy who's young head coach.
He's also dyed in the wool Oklahoma.
Yeah, Heisman Trophy winner for Oklahoma.
Winning on the road's tough. Winning on the road against a good football team's tough. They're good. Okay? We're going to continue to face better as we go. Played well tonight. Anybody think we played our best tonight?
Yeah, no.
Good teams keep getting better. Keep getting better. Yeah. I'm proud of the investment, the competitive composure, resetting to the next play. Continuing to compete. Man, it's just us being us, all right? And let's just keep making us a better version every single day. You guys got me?
Yes, sir.
All right. This thing, coming back to normal was never about me.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was.
It was not. But I appreciate you all having a little extra for me. Yeah. Bow your heads, grab two.
Yeah. Hey, we did that for you, coach. I did game ball for you.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
That
man.
Last part's cool, and you can tell Heupel gets choked up. And did you see when they panned Heupel's dad in the crowd?
No.
Towards the end of the game, they mentioned, you know, how dyed in the wool Oklahoma they are,
yeah,
right? And his dad's wearing a Tennessee shirt, and he said, you know, it was kind of like it was a tough thing for him, but it's his boy, right? And dad's a hard ass. You can see it. He's still got the crew cut and like the big like military glasses. You know what I'm talking? You know the look.
Oh yeah.
And he's in there. You can see there's a tear like rolling down his face, and he's like, "Get back in there, tear." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was like, "We can't allow this," but you can see how much it meant to that family.
Well, he's probably sad Oklahoma lost.
He's sitting there going, "Boomer, Sooner."
He wasn't happy for his kid. He's like, "Damn it, Oklahoma lost this game. I don't think we're ever going to recover from it."
I tell you, this Tennessee team, man, they are something. They're like, if you told me they were in the national title, I wouldn't bat an eye.
Not one bit.
Would just not at all. Like the road that they have to hoe ahead is brutal.
Yeah,
but if they come out on top, they will have earned every last bit of it.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting to see kind of what the attrition looks like mm-hmm. for them.
And does the freshman quarterback start making mistakes?
Yep. Well,
he hasn't so far.
And that's one thing mm-hmm. Heupel does, man.
He helps them minimize.
Yeah. gets you in those places to be successful.
Oklahoma does really good creating those offensive coordinators, don't they?
Yeah, they're not
Lincoln,
bad.
Lincoln, Heupel.
They're probably
the two best in college football right now.
And we don't talk about this, but Heupel did the same thing that Riley did. Like, the issues at Tennessee were their defense, and he mm-hmm. went and got a good DC, and then he got out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I mean, that's the biggest change that they've had over there that's put them in the position that
Tim
they're
Beck,
in.
Man.
Not just really getting good. Nico and getting a good O-line and good running
no,
back.
No, their defense is
it's
nasty.
It's that defense.
It's like, it's not even like, oh, it's a good defense. That defense is nasty.
Led by the 25-year-old
yeah.
Pele or whatever.
Yeah, Pele, yeah.
11?
Yeah, Keenan Pele.
He's
yeah.
good.
We talked about him on Friday. He's like 6'5", 250. He's an absolute monster.
Those guys are good to have.
Yeah, having like a seventh-year senior, 6 foot. You know, 4'5", 250-pound middle linebacker is super useful.
Did you guys hear the Brent Venables?
Was it an excuse tour? It was like
post-game? No. Before the game, like leading up, mm-mm. he was talking about when they recruited Heupel to Oklahoma.
He didn't want him.
No, they all wanted Akili Smith, and Mike Leach was the offensive coordinator, and was like, no. I like the Heupel kid more, and he was talking about how
that's a pretty good pirate there.
R.I.P. He was talking about how Heupel came for his recruiting trip, and he's like, "This is like this skinny, pasty white kid.
Just doesn't look the part.
Not skinny anymore."
And it was no, he looks like Bobby Hill, and sounds like Nate Bargatze.
Yeah, if you closed your eyes, he sounds like Nate Bargatze.
But
he's from Tennessee, so.
Yeah, there you go. But then Venables is like, we could not have been more wrong. Like, we wanted, like, the prototypical guy. And it's like, couldn't have been more wrong. Like, Akili Smith was a top five pick in the NFL draft.
Yeah.
But it was like, Heupel won a Heisman Trophy for him. And yeah. Mike Leach was like, no, he can spin it, man. No. He's just going to go ahead and whip that ball around. It's pretty sweet.
And then you've got Sharon Moore was also on that team,
yeah,
too.
As an offensive lineman, yeah. Sharon Moore has lost a lot of weight.
My God, I did not realize that was the same person.
Mm-mm,
like, I knew that Sharon Moore existed.
I didn't.
But I didn't know that was the same.
No.
Fat like, guys get skinny. Skinny guys get fat.
He looks like he got shorter, too. Like,
Back
yeah,
surgeries.
I don't know. Big shoulder pads back then made
That's,
you look
You
taller.
Know what? You're right.
Big shoulder pads. Yeah. Yep. All right. Big win for Tennessee, though. They're for real. They're legit,
are.
Man. They truly are.
Now, I tell you what, who's not winning? Our worst day on the web, the Chicago White Sox. Shout out to their social media, but we got to dive into the worst team in modern baseball history for worst day on the web. But first, here's Big Will Betts of the Sports Center Update.
It's time for today's worst day on the web. With Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Well, that sucks.
Well, this week in the Chicago White Sox matched the level of ineptitude for modern-day losses, suffering their 120th loss of the season. 120th. Like, let
that
sink in.
Is that bad? Is that bad?
That is modern-day hell.
Mm.
And there's really no excuse for it other than the fact that ownership is just meddling in everything and causing more than a million issues. I do have to credit whoever's ever the social media manager for the Chicago White Sox. Either they have the blessing of somebody in charge or they are just writing checks and hoping somebody never cashes them. Because they have gone absolutely full unhinged in the best possible way. September 21st. Chicago White Sox tweeted out after their loss where they gave up three runs in the eighth inning, which in the eighth inning or less, they have given up where they led the game. They have given up three runs or more than any team in baseball history.
Yeah, it's really bad.
They fall apart at the end. It's like, it's not just their bullpen. It's like they just fall apart.
Well, did you hear what Bob Nightingale reported last week, too?
Mm.
The White Sox are planning to cut their payroll next year.
Yeah, that's interesting. Their GM came out and said that they are not going to go out in free agency. They've got a ton of young, good players they're going to invest in. I'm just like, are they stripped?
But here's the problem. We talked about this last week in that the White Sox are in such a bad spot because of the fact that the way that the collective bargaining agreement works now, that Major League Baseball has a draft lottery,
mm-hmm.
since they are a large market team, they cannot have back-to-back years with a top 10 pick.
Mm-hmm.
They're the worst team in baseball. They cannot be or a top 9 pick. Their top pick will be 10th
yep.
in the draft.
Here's my conspiracy. He's going full major league.
Yeah.
He's stripping this down, not so he can sell it, so he can relocate to Tennessee.
It's a this entire organization, it is an absolute joke.
Because that's the only thing that makes sense. Because this isn't like the Astros going shortcut through hell and like investing in everything.
No.
Because they're not investing.
No.
They're not investing in anything.
There's no want or need to be good.
And so you have to go to the point, and then they're not like looking for a new stadium. That hasn't been even close, because right now the Bears are getting a new stadium, and there's no other team in Chicago is getting another stadium for 50 years. Because they're getting some public funding, and this is not going to happen. There's just no way in hell that is going to happen.
So I hate to see it.
I genuinely believe that he is stripping this thing down and driving it so far into the dirt that it's just like, yeah, relocate them. The Cubs are there. Let the Cubs be Chicago's team. The Southside fans, it's tough for them. It's a lot like the Oakland situation.
Awful though.
It's very similar. But he just watched John J. Fisher get his way.
Yeah.
He watched him get his way. So you relocate to Tennessee, you relocate to Nashville, which isn't that far. When you're talking about grand scheme, like as far as like markets, it's not that far.
But it's you're ripping a fan base that has a 100-year rooted history in that city.
A World Series title in the past 20 years.
And that is the biggest difference between what John J. Fisher and the A's are doing as opposed to the White Sox, is that you're talking over 100 years of baseball of the Chicago White Sox. And the A's had been the Kansas City A's and the Philadelphia A's. They are in, albeit they've been there for over, 60 years or whatever. But at the same time, let's look at this and say, it's over 100. It's twice as long that the White Sox have been there.
They're a pickup sticks franchise. There's just no world where I can sit here and look at this and then MLB is like, oh, yeah, no, this is just, you know, they're just doing whatever. No, they're stripping this thing down so they can move it to Nashville.
Yep.
And it's a bummer. But in the meantime, the reason this is a best worst day, because after that game where they lose and they set the record for futility or match the record for futility, 120 losses with the opportunity to be worse.
Yeah. Still there. Hey, you can still do it, man. There's still time.
Yeah, you can still you can be the worst.
Make it an untouchable record if you're going to do it.
Go for like five more losses. Make it happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they do play the Angels.
Ooh. Well, I mean, they can outsuck the Angels.
And the Tigers. Tigers are going to.
Oh, Tigers are going to beat the crap out of them.
Yeah. If they. Well, I was just going to say, if they have their starting.
No.
They don't even need their starters.
No. But this is the Chicago White Sox tweet following their loss. Final can be found on the MLB app.
Perfect. That social media manager is just, they're leaning into it at this point because there's no reason why you should just beat yourself down with the comments. Just let it happen.
No.
Just say, you know where to find it. You know what happened.
There's another one they tweeted out where you ever seen, you know, the meme of the off ramp for the car?
Yeah.
It has the sign, you know, going to the right is one thing, going straight is another. To the right, it says literally anything else. Down the straight line is post the final score, and then it has the admin taking the right, literally anything else.
I love the Washington Capitals they took a page out of that book. Caps lost in a big one, and so they just tweeted out, score can be found on the NHL app.
Yep. It's smart. In the night before, the White Sox admin tweeted out, final, the number of runs rescored was not greater than the number of runs that they scored.
Ooh, I like it.
So they're,
I'm just kind of the upset final couple it games, took 120 to get to this point.
I think the F's given scale has spiked, and it's just not there.
Mm-mm.
Because why not? I mean, why not have – I mean, here's the thing. And then on the 18th, they had final. The other team scored more runs than us.
Beautiful.
Look, I mean, you've got, if nothing, I mean, and these are getting like 150,000 plus likes. So, like, the engagement is there. So, if you're running, like, some kind of ads on your tweets or whatever, like, because that's the thing is, like, this, it's still Chicago, you know, you still have eyeballs and stuff. So, they're accomplishing goals. Like, their metrics are going to be up. So, when he's sitting there, he, she, they, whatever, whoever it is, decides that they want to go move into another, for another team, they can go, hey, look, we can make the best out of anything. The social media reel is doing great for them.
Perfect. Yeah. Get engagements, baby.
You want to talk about another terrible owner?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Did you hear Jerry? Did you hear Jimmy Johnson on David Tepper?
Ooh. Yeah, I heard Jerry Jones too, which was also phenomenal.
Yeah, so let's get into some more crappy ownership here in the NFL, and tee off on the Panthers here coming up on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
Well,
Well, if you're watching Fox NFL pregame show yesterday morning, you would have caught Mr. Jimmy Johnson, former head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, letting the world know how he feels about David Tepper, the Carolina Panthers owner.
I had all these coordinators and all these head coaches. The owner of the Carolina Panthers, that's the problem. He's making the major decisions without listening to his football people.
Tepper?
David Tepper. You look at him. And now it's his team. He can do whatever he wants to. But look at the people that's left. Now, he's the one that wanted Bryce Young as the number one pick. And also look, Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore, Brian Burns. You look at, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold. Look at coaches, Steve Wilkes, Frank White, Matt Rule. On and on. He's run them all off. He's making the decisions. He has got to listen to his football people and quit playing fantasy football.
Ooh-wee! Oh, boy. He's not wrong. He's also intimately familiar with ownership that meddles.
Yes.
Clearly because of the relationship that got stretched to oblivion with Jerry Jones of the Cowboys.
No doubt about it.
Now, they've made up since then, and Jimmy's a part of the Cowboys world again. But Jimmy's speaking from probably the most experienced coach in history of meddlesome owners.
Yeah.
And listening to football people. Now, Jarrah got a few things right along the way, whereas David Tepper has gotten absolutely nothing right so far.
Yeah, this is, poor ownership, meddling, and having the venture capital mentality in owning a professional sports
franchise. Thinking you know better.
Is not the way to go.
No.
Because especially when you take over a franchise that needs to be rebuilt from the ground up, it's not like you can go as cutthroat in the hiring and firing process. You have to build a culture from the ground up. And the way Tepper has gone about it is like you're watching the show Billions, right? Where you're just like everybody is expendable. You can fire anybody. You can cut the corners. And you're going to make sure that you cut the right corner to make a buttload of cash. It's not the way professional sports work. Like, it's often a long, grueling process to become relevant, and he doesn't want it.
There's a reason why you see new owners come in, regardless of the sport.
Yeah.
MLB, NBA, NFL, NHL. The overarching problem that you see with new ownership is not that they don't care, it's that they care too much. In that, well, I'm successful in my venture. I know how to do this.
Yep.
And they try to reinvent the wheel every freaking time. Every single time. And it's just like, oh, here we go again. Here's the stupid. And it's none of them. None of them has ever been successful. And you can point out like the Vegas Golden Knights, their success story.
Yeah.
You know what was successful about them? Even though they were a new franchise, they brought in the most experienced hockey people imaginable.
Bingo.
That was the difference. Now, they had some luck with some of the players that they brought in as well, which, again, is reinforced by bringing in all of the hockey people. It matters. But every time you see, sell this or we need new ownership that, Matt Ishbia comes in, gets Kevin Durant, but also gets Bradley Beal because he wants to have the three-headed monster.
Yeah.
And then they trade away DeAndre Ayton for Yusuf Nurkic.
Isaiah Thomas.
And wants to bring Isaiah Thomas in. It's like, oh my God, are we really going to do this? Because you trust these people that are your friends as opposed to trusting the people that people trust.
Bingo.
It's just, David Tepper is more than just a meddling owner. He's a complete a-hole.
He's a poor owner.
Yeah. And the fact that I think the reason why Jimmy Johnson is allowed to do this is I bet you he's probably encouraged to do it. To put this out there to get Tepper in his place.
You say that it has been incredible. Like you watch Good Morning Football on the NFL Network. Mm-hmm. You watch the NFL Network's pregame show.
This.
They're laying into him too.
Because
it's like gloves are off. And
I think it's been a blessing because
a lot of owners in the NFL are saying no, this isn't how we want.
Because the problem is Tepper comes in and he's the big thing and you know what in the room because he's worth more than anybody.
Look, in somebody, I wish Major League Baseball had the balls to do this with the A's and the White Sox, the team that we were just talking about.
Yes. And you can kind of come full circle and bring this local. Paul Allen, for 20 years, was the richest owner in the NBA, worth you know, $25 to $40 billion before these, you know, the Teslas of the world blew up for hundreds of billions. And he ruled that room, that boardroom of the owner's room. He was number one. Everything went through him. Why? Because he had the biggest pocketbooks in the room. And he wielded that power effectively, but efficiently. It wasn't like just because I'm the richest guy in the room, because there were other owners that were rubbed the wrong way. James Dolan's like, well, I'm in New York. I'm in one of the biggest markets. You're in the small market. What does it matter? Well, Paul Allen was basically smarter than everybody else. It wasn't the case of like he thought he was.
Yeah.
This is the guy who, you know, was pioneering streaming in the 90s.
Yeah, Blazer Vision, baby.
Like his ideas and having, you know, the internal broadcast and CBA and investing in the league and this, so many different things. Tepper's just a big pocketbook. And right now, I would say probably 15 years ago, that's all that mattered.
Yeah.
I don't think that matters anymore because you're getting away. Like it,
all of them are billionaires.
Yeah. Now. And like you were, especially in the NFL, you've got the Walmart family who's worth, you know, how many hundreds of billions of dollars collectively.
Right.
Like it's not, you don't have to kowtow to these individuals anymore. Because the money, especially, look, and I think this is where we're going to end up moving, is you're going to move to the private equity stuff where you're starting to get, the Saudi money's going to come.
Yeah. But and, I don't know if they're going to, I don't know if they're, because they don't need to go to the Saudi money. I think there will be apprehension from the NFL to do that.
I think there's apprehension, but I think like everything else, it eventually gets there because the money is so overwhelming. But my point being, whether it's a Saudi money or it's another investment portfolio but, money, like it's going to go that way.
All of the groups that do this, it all turns sour very quickly for them. And the NFL knows that. It knows that every single time that people are going into business, it's not going to work out well, especially when you're looking at the sports landscape too. You know, like I think the NFL is going to sit back as long as they can to see how things play out in the EPL with LIV, soon F1. To be the PGA Tour.
No.
And everybody's going that has these business dealings are like, this was not the greatest idea. The money was great.
Yeah.
But the functionality, not great. And that's what the NFL thrives on right now. Is that functionality?
Turns out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, coming next, you want to talk some more NFL?
Yeah.
Okay. There's plenty of teams that came out of the weekend. We talked about the good, the 3-0. Which teams cratered and absolutely fell on their face? And which teams are most fearful of those 0-3 starts coming up here in hour number 3 on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse wrap.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.